Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new Delta X podcast with Ellen Hsu. These are conversations with changemakers, innovators, and self-starters who have made their mark on the world at a young age, breaking down the journeys of those who are changing the status quo and building the future today. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome back to Delta X Podcast. So today we'll be talking a little bit more on the tech side. We'll be getting a little bit into an organization called Hack Club. And we actually have the founder of Hack Club here. He's Zach Latta, and he dropped out of his freshman year at high school to work in the tech industry. And by age 16, he actually created an app used by 5 million people. And so a little bit more about Hack Club, in case some of you guys may have not heard of it already. It's basically a club that Zach wished he had in high school. And it's brought together so many high schoolers from all around the world, hackers, makers, coders, with over 13,000 teenagers. And just in the last 2 years, Hack Clubbers have built and manufactured custom dinosaur-shaped Arduino boards. I actually have one right here, super cool. Sent a camera to outer space, spoken with Elon Musk, and a variety of other activities that they've been doing to try to get more people in tech. And so Zach was also awarded the Thiel Fellowship when he was 17 years old and was also featured in Forbes 30 Under 30 when he was 18. So welcome, Zach.
Thanks, Ellen. And thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah. So today's podcast is also going to be guest hosted by Audit Gupta. And so, yeah, really happy to have you here to co-host this audit.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me, Ellen.
Yeah. So just to get us started, let's start from the very beginning, actually. So going way back, I've heard that at age 7, you took apart your parents' computer and then you also created Top Chart games at 15. So how did you actually develop this interest in technology and hacking?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm 23 now. I started Hack Club 7 years ago when I was 16. But for me, I grew up on the outskirts of Los Angeles. Both my parents were social workers. My mom worked in foster care and my dad worked in homelessness. And I went to public schools that, like most schools, not only in Los Angeles and in California, but in all of America, still don't offer any coding classes. Mm-hmm. That said, I was just one of those kids that could never pull myself away from computers. I got a Game Boy when I was 5 and I was just like, this is the greatest thing ever. I was like always trying to take things apart. I felt like, I think I felt as a kid that if only I could understand how computers work, I would unlock the secrets to the universe. When I was 7, I was really into this game called Club Penguin, and I got started coding because my friends and I wanted to build a website about it, and I volunteered myself as the webmaster. So like I went on Google, I typed in how do you build a website, and I got totally hooked. Later, I was really into video games. I got really involved in this online MMO when I was 12, where I think I harassed the staff so much that they were just like, screw it, let's make this child an admin. And I learned like some early scripting with that. And later, you know, I feel like I was really lucky to get roped into some other projects that were really just kind of incredible opportunities to work on.
Bring us through that experience as well. I know you dropped out of high school after freshman year, so you're involved with all of these things, getting really into tech. So what really made you drop out of high school and what did it feel like being in your shoes at that time?
Yeah, I mean, for me, coding was always a solitary activity. And I think I was just desperate for a community. Like, oh my God, I was so lonely in high school. I was so lonely in middle school. I was just like so desperate to meet other people that, you know, shared my interests. I enrolled in local community college classes. I tried to like go to every meetup I could, but of course being 14 and 15, you don't have access to your own transportation. So I like very, you know, probably kind of annoyingly begged my mom to drive me to all these different things. But really, like for me, high school was always very tough because it felt like the one thing I wanted to do with all of my time was also the one thing I couldn't do at the place where I had to spend all my time. I tried to start a programming club. It was terrible. It was really bad. And I think that was really just because I didn't have support and I didn't have a community. And when I ultimately ended up dropping out of high school, I technically tested out after my freshman year. it really wasn't because I think I was too smart for school or like I was too good or anything like that. It really was because I was just so desperately lonely and trying to find a community. And shortly after I finished school early, I moved out of my parents' home when I was 16. I moved to San Francisco. I moved to this group house where I had no idea how I was going to make rent. I was renting one room. There were like 8 bedrooms. There were 12 housemates in this house. All of them were older than me. I was so intimidated. I had no idea how I was going to make ends meet. But after a few days at that home, being 16, like living on my own in San Francisco, not only did I feel like I was in tech mecca, but I felt like for the first time in my entire life, I had started to find my tribe in person. And, that is really like what I think was driving kind of an educational experience for me. And a big part of why I started Hack Club was because I just felt like, oh my God, like I know there are other people out there going through similar experiences. I so desperately wish I had a community that was good and kind and like just people to like make things together. I started Hack Club because it just felt crazy that like I had to like drop out of high school, move hundreds of miles away from home because like do this thing that was like, I was totally terrified of, to try and find a home for myself.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's really driven by that need for like community, right? And I think that makes a lot of sense when you take a look at even today, it's evolved a lot, but there still aren't that many computer science classes at a lot of school. And a lot of people are really lacking that community.
So, I totally agree.
Yeah. So like how you were talking about after dropping out of high school and living with those people, so how did your experience with where you were working and trying to get rent help you with preparing for Hack Club and starting it up?
So I started Hack Club only like 4 months after I moved out. When I first arrived in San Francisco, I spent what was basically all of my savings up until that point, which was like $3,000 or $4,000 on my security deposit on first month's rent. Like, oh my God, renting in San Francisco is so expensive. I had no idea that like, actually, in every city, it costs thousands of dollars a month to live there. It's crazy. It's so expensive. And I had no idea how I was going to make rent. I was just thinking, okay, maybe I'll do web contracting. Maybe I'll like meet someone who like will pay me hourly. And the day after I arrived, I had my very first meeting kind of after I had moved. And I met with this guy who was starting a company. He offered me a job. I took the offer, and I'm so incredibly grateful to him. And together I was the first engineer. He had already done kind of like the bootstrapping of this. We made what the idea was, what if we made the silliest messaging app in the world? Like, what if we made like Facebook Messenger or like WhatsApp or like, kind of like iMessage, but what if we try to make it so silly? It's like stupid and as a result novel. So we decided to make a messaging app where the only word you could send people was the word yo, and it was called yo. And I mean, like, or the founder was like a genius, you know, like it was the perfect idea for the time. And he had some connections, was able to actually get investment for the whole thesis was like, let's build a silly app and like get people to use it because it's silly. And then like, we can turn it into something useful. And Yo became the number one app on the entire app store. Like millions of people were using it. Like within, I think my first 3 weeks, there were over 1 billion Yo's sent. 1 billion with a B. Like, that's crazy. Like all these companies, like the NFL was reaching out to us. Like, it was crazy. That was my first job in San Francisco. And I'm so grateful to Orr for that opportunity. I was there for a few months. I was like, I thought I was a good programmer. I was like totally useless, being honest. And, I wanted to rewrite a big part of it in Go, which let me tell you, like rewriting anything in Go is probably a bad idea. And then also like, I love Go. I still really like Go, but like rewriting anything before you have like a huge user base that's sustained is a bad idea usually. And then also like to do that in Go in 2014, when like nobody knew Go was like bad idea. And I kind of took all the savings from that, which wasn't a lot, but which like, you know, stretching very, very, very far, I could live on for a period of time in San Francisco. I took that money and I used that to start Hack Club. And I think I started working full time on that in like September or October of 2014. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, all right, like this has to exist in the world.
there you started Hack Club, and then how were you able to meet like some like people to help you start up Hack Club, like your CEO, COO, and other people to help actually bring it up?
Yeah, so Hack Club has been, you know, I think to build something like Hack Club, it takes a tribe. Hack Club is not, we're not like a high flying startup. We don't have a fancy office in San Francisco that costs $30,000 a month. We are not venture funded. We're nonprofit, which is, you know, that's very uncommon today. And especially in 2014, that was like a very uncommon thing to start. And around me when I was starting it, I wanted to start a nonprofit because I knew that I wouldn't trust it if I was a student and it wasn't a nonprofit. And every single person in my entire world that I knew around me was starting a company. And everyone was like, why are you starting a nonprofit? Why are you starting a nonprofit? Why are you starting a nonprofit? And for me, a thing I've always thought about, and I thought about then, was I feel like when you are trying to make decisions, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can think about making that decision. Like, should I go to this event? Or should I like do this thing with my life? Or like, should I do this? I don't know. Should I like say no to someone or say yes to someone? Or like how do you evaluate decisions in life? And a thing I think I was thinking about at the time was I just want to live an interesting life. So if I have two options, I'm just going to ask which of these two options is a more interesting one. And I'm just going to do that. And similarly, when I was in San Francisco, I was trying to do that with the people I spent my time with. If there's an event happening, I ask, like, if I go to this event, will it be interesting? And will my life be more interesting as a result? And as a result, like, I met like so many crazy people from like all walks of life who, you know, had moved to San Francisco from across the world. Some people had lived there forever. Like some people who wanted to like completely get rid of the concept of a country. Some people who like were the exact opposite of that and wanted one country for the whole world. I mean, it was just like this kind of incredible, like melting pot of different ideas. And over the years of Hack Club, you know, I think I've been very fortunate to meet people that kind of share this purpose of, oh my God, like something like Hack Club has to exist in the world and it has to be good. Like the thing is like not a lot of people believe that new institutions need to exist. But for the few people who believe that new institutions need to exist, too often they think that like too often they do it in a way where the institution exists to serve itself rather to exist and to serve the people it's trying to serve. And the way I see it is like Hack Club, if it's bad for Hack Clubbers, if it's bad for the teenagers in Hack Club, like Hack Club should disappear. Like Hack Club, like there's literally no point. And I you know, over the years we started to I think find people who kind of shared that common mission and purpose. And I don't think I would have found those people if I hadn't kind of been asking myself that question of how do I just try to be in the most interesting room possible. I really believe in this idea that like you are probably the median of like the five people that you spend the most time with. So like go spend time with really interesting people. And by the way, interesting isn't having a degree from Harvard.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting outlook, you know, just comparing what is going to be the most interesting thing that I can do to really put myself in, like, to really form like a unique life. And I think a lot of time when people consider these options, there's a lot of clutter involved, like, okay, what are the incentives? Like, is this going to, like the social aspects as well? But I think this is really putting in a position where it's like, okay, am I going to be an interesting and better person after doing this? It's like really a really clear way of optimizing for the right thing.
Thank you. And I want to be clear, like it wasn't the only thing I was asking myself, you know, like obviously, you know, I was like, fuck, I want to make money. I don't want to go bankrupt. I don't want to like have to go back home after 2 years, like, and be humiliated and like go to my parents. Like, oh my, like there's definitely pride in that. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think that, I love that question because so often in time, like, if you want to live an interesting life, and I think almost everyone wants to live an interesting life, you have to do interesting things. And to do interesting things that are big, you can't do them alone. So you need to have interesting people around you. And you find those people just seeking them.
When you were starting, is there anything that you would have done differently? Or like looking back when you're like connecting the dots, is there anything you would have changed or anything you wish you would have done differently when starting Hack Club?
Yeah, 100%. Oh my God, so many things. Holy crap. The first thing was, like, when I started Hack Club, I was like, educational experiences need to exist to serve the student. The crazy thing about schools, and this isn't that for some reason nobody seems to talk about, is when you, like, schools are complicated, really. Like, actually, education is a very complicated thing. There was a survey done of schools around the country. I forget who did it, but they essentially asked 1,000 different school boards, what is the purpose of school? And of your school. And they essentially got 1,000 different answers. Is school to like create a baseline for a population? Is school to teach everybody the same language so they can communicate? Is school to create a common history? Is school to create and educate a workforce that is trained and able to do jobs? Is school to create people who have holistic outlooks on life? Is school to drive real estate prices? Is school to drive classes? And maybe classes are actually necessary. I don't personally agree with that, but there are people who make that argument. There are so many different reasons why school exists. And when you look at all the different players in school, like you look at the parents, the superintendents, the teachers, when you look at Pearson and McGraw-Hill, the people write the textbooks, when you look at the states, every state has their Department of Education. When you look at the federal Department of Education, when you look at like this, the real estate agents in the community, when you look at the town who wants to drive tax revenue, like when you look at the 100,000 different people who are kind of involved in the decision-making of designing an education experience, and you ask, and you really like sit down and ask, like, who are you building for? You know, that person that is selling that textbook to that school or to that curriculum standard setting person, like, who are you building for? Like, really, like, who is your user? Like, who is the person where, like, if you do a bad job, you are going to go out of business? It's never the student, ever. If you're lucky, it's a teacher, but it's never the student, ever. And that's the problem with education. Like, that's it. We just need more places. And I think the beauty of Hack Club, when Hack Club's good, and Hack Club isn't always good, there's so many places it can be so much better. When Hack Club's good, it creates a space that is truly built where, like, if teenagers don't like Hack Club, like, dies. Literally. It's like, that, we've just set ourselves up that way. And I think the biggest mistake I made early on was I talked about that, but I didn't actually walk the walk. I thought, okay, like, we're starting Hack Club, but like, I don't know how to start good Hack Clubs because I tried to start a program club at my high school. My programming club was terrible. So like, we need to figure out how to like start good programming clubs. And I was like, all right, well, to do that, like, we need to first teach coding because people don't know coding. How do you learn coding? Should you do JavaScript? Should you do Java? Should you do Python? When you teach coding, what's the best way to do it? Should you do creative programming? Should you do live programming? Like, there's 1,000 options. Is it p5.js? But what if that technology gets out of date? Like, should we use YouTube tutorials? And the first year was essentially just planning. It was like conversations like that. And we thought, okay, well, like maybe we could learn how to run a hack club by actually running a hack club at a high school. So we went to a local high school in San Francisco called Lowell High School. We went and actually started a hack club there. We went every week and ran meetings ourselves. And obviously, even if you're the same age as the people in the club, which I was, obviously someone from the outside coming into the school and running a club is going to be very different from someone at the school running the club. Yeah. So like we did that. Then we like tried to like do a summer program to like try to figure out like what's the hack club format. And then we like tried to do this thing that we called Hack Club Labs, dumbest idea ever, where we had like 10 hack clubs. You're trying to focus really in on them. The point where Hack Club actually started being not useless and useful was in January, 2016, where we said, and pardon my language, basically I said, fuck it. Like, let's just start clubs. Like, I have no idea how to start clubs, but let's just like do it. So on our website, I opened up an application form and said, apply to start a hack club. And for everybody who applied, we started getting applications miraculously. I just got on the phone with each leader. And I said, look, I don't know how to start a hack club, but what I am going to do is like, I am basically your employee now and I'm going to work for you. I don't care. Like, I don't literally anything I will do to help you run a good hack club. And like, let's just talk every week. And that first semester where we actually started starting clubs, we went from like essentially zero hack clubs to 80 by the end of that first semester. What? And a lot of them were very good, but some of them were actually really good. And, you know, very quickly, the things started to fall in place for what people actually needed. Turns out it's actually really hard to run a good hack club meeting. It's actually really hard. Like we spend hundreds of millions, we spend billions of dollars on computer science education in America. And still today, Gallup does a poll. Google commissioned Gallup to do a poll on the on computer science education in America. And one thing they found is that student interest in computer science goes down after computer science classes are implemented at school. It's like, what? Like, it turns out it's actually really hard to do it. So we have to have like high club workshops, and like workshops have to actually build something. Like suddenly we started doing useful things. So I think like by far my biggest kind of regret early on was I didn't walk the walk. Like if you want to make things, you actually have to make things. If you want to make something useful, you actually have to make something useful in the world. It's not good enough to want to do it. You have to actually do it. I saw this awesome blog post. It was by this person who tried to make a mental health app. And it was a recap about like the mental health. It was like, they're trying to like help people with depression or something like that. And, you know, I struggled with a lot of that when I was in high school, like really, like I was like diagnosed with depression. I was like, so like really, I was in a horrible place as a teenager. I really care about mental health. So I was reading this post because I was interested in the app, and the post was basically the app failed, and the post was analysis of why this app failed. And like one of the first sentences, which I just love, is if you want to help people, you actually have to help people. It's like so great, and it captures why like 90% of the nonprofit universe is completely useless. Mm-hmm. And also for teenagers, I think that like as a young person, everyone around you is so focused on getting to college. And also you're probably so focused on getting to college. And like, honestly, like, look, I'm not anti-college. I didn't go to college, but I think college would be great for a lot of people. And like wanting to is not good enough. Starting a thing isn't good enough. In corporate entity, like literally nothing matters besides what you actually do. I think that's probably the biggest thing for me early on at Hack Club. There's a thousand other things, but that's definitely it. I was just lying to myself.
That's a really great lesson. And I think definitely right about like having to know who you're helping. And I think it, like when you hear it, it sounds really easy, but actually being able to do that and actually being able to know the difference you're making for the people you want to help.
Yeah. And also like trying to do that dirty work as well. Like how you went and then talked to those kids and then also just basically became their employee, which is like a great thing where people need that and to help that run that club. So I think that's really cool that you did that. Now, like when we see Hack Club, now it's like grown after 7 years. And one of the main things we see is doing extremely well. And you're getting a lot of influential people involved, like founder of GitHub. You have a lot of sponsorships and donations. So how would you help or give any advice to like young people who are listening right now and trying to create that type of club or trying to get those donations from those influential people?
I can maybe speak briefly on philanthropy. Philanthropy has been like by far one of the hardest things about Hack Club that I never expected to think about when we started it. Like, honestly, like my thinking was just like, I don't know, we'll figure out money. I have no idea. And also growing up, both of my parents worked for nonprofits their whole careers. And I also saw like firsthand how bad philanthropy practices and kind of bad management like burns out people, doesn't solve the problem. And, can honestly, and sometimes at some place, I think exacerbate the problems. So I really, when I started Hack Club, I really wanted to try and foster an organization that not only created kind of the community and clubs and everything around that I so desperately wish I had when I was a teenager, but also I wanted to try and create a nonprofit that I wish existed in the world. Especially after seeing kind of my parents' experience, like, oh my God, like, it's crazy. It's like absolutely insane. And nobody starts a nonprofit to spend their time on philanthropy, but the reason why every nonprofit dies is because of philanthropy. And the thing that most people don't talk about nonprofits is there's really two deaths for nonprofits. The first death is where you just don't get enough money to keep operating, so you stop. And that's like the normal death. But the second death is where you stop serving the people you were founded to serve and you start serving the donors instead. That's a zombie organization. There's so many zombie nonprofits. It's crazy. If you're a young person starting a nonprofit, I think most of philanthropy is honestly fundamentally around relationships. People give money to people that they like and people that they trust. And that's how Hack Club's philanthropy works too. We start by trying to meet interesting people. Then we try to have interesting conversations. And we have tried to have interesting follow through. And then we try to ask for interesting gifts. And that's it. But also for Hack Club, most of our philanthropy is focused on individuals. And really there's four kinds of philanthropy in the world. There's corporate philanthropy where a company's giving money. And that always has to have a purpose. Like they have to prove like return on investment for that. So like you'll see event sponsorships, but like you will never get a grant for $100,000 ever that doesn't have something attached to it. There's foundation philanthropy. There's like really big foundations where it's like the Ford Foundation, which they give away tons of money, or like the Gates Foundation. They have this whole process around it. And there's small foundations, which are called family foundations, which give like $10,000, $50,000, $100,000, those kind of numbers. There's big individuals. These are all high net worth individuals. These are people who've like founded companies or are independently wealthy that give directly and you're talking with them. And then the final type is just smaller donors. There's people, you know, like you and me giving $5 or $10 to organizations that we like and believe in. There's also the government, but that's kind of its own separate thing. So I think that if you're a young person starting a nonprofit, you really have to go after either individuals or family foundations, or high net worth individuals. Those are kind of like your three options. And I don't know how to raise money from individuals. Hack Club is a donate form on our website. A lot of Hack Club alumni give through it. I'm so grateful to all of them. There's no expectation that you give to Hack Club, but like for everyone who does, I really appreciate it. But it's a very small portion of the rest of our philanthropy. We really focus in on individuals, and it's a relationship-oriented thing. So I would almost suggest if you're a young person, like I would start by asking the question, like, how do you meet interesting people and have interesting conversations and get in interesting rooms? Like if you're ever in a room where you feel like, well, I think I thought about it, I was like, if I'm ever in a room where I feel like I'm not the dumbest person, then like, I got to change the rooms I'm in. Like if I'm not constantly being humbled, like I need to like move. And I think stuff like that helps. And also that's like how you build a team and stuff along those lines. But also like the way to talk with interesting people is to do interesting things. So it's kind of chicken and egg problem. If you're a young person, I would honestly just say like, go do interesting things and reach out to your heroes. And you'd probably be surprised if you cold email them, how many will reply and actually talk with you. I will say though, as somebody who gets cold emails, like if you cold email me and we have a conversation, you're not making something useful. It's a lot less fun for me than someone who's like making something interesting, because then we have something to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of great advice in there. And I think really no one talks about philanthropy, or like no one talks about the financial portion when they're talking about how to start a nonprofit. But I actually wanted to ask one last question, and this one is a really tough question. So sorry for kind of throwing this at you on a live podcast. But I actually wanted to ask you about the contrarian question, because you seem to have like a very unique set of views. And also you've been through the Thiel Fellowship as well. So yeah, I just wanted to ask, like, what is the important truth that very few people agree with you on?
If you want to help people, you actually have to help people. That's what I'm going to throw out. It sounds not controversial, but I think actually it is controversial. Most nonprofits don't believe this. Most people don't believe this. Most people think that planning is more important than actually doing things. And even most people who say that they think that doing things is more important than planning, most of them don't actually do anything. It's crazy. I think that's huge and really important. I also think like climate change is as simple as like carbon credits. And I don't understand why I could totally be missing the picture, but like my understanding is that climate change is a problem that is because we have an unpriced externality, and all we have to do is create a market for that price. And then like climate change is solved, at least on a national level. I guess on a global level, there's a collective action problem, but I bet that like that's solvable too. We just gotta price it in. That's like the only problem. And everything else gets fixed. Like if we create a market for carbon sequestration by pricing it, by creating a market, like what I'm picturing is, what if the government set a tax where there's an emissions limit? Like if we have set a cost for what the, like a cost of sequestering a ton of carbon is, and then the government will pay to sequester it. And you can either pay the government or you can pay other people to lower your net carbon emissions. I feel like we will then have carbon sequestration technology. Like the way to solve climate change is by like make it possible for someone to become a billionaire by solving like carbon sequestration. And if we have that, then like all the smartest people in the world are gonna start asking, how do I do carbon sequestration and other types of like carbon removal? And right now I imagine that not a lot of people are doing that, or like a lot of really smart people, but there's no funding or resources behind it. And we need to like get people aligned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you mentioned, there really needs to be a better incentive for people who are actually solving really big problems.
I agree with that.
Thank you so much for coming on. And thanks so much, Otto, for co-hosting as well.
Well, thanks so much for saying that, Ellen. And thank you for having me on, Otto. Thank you. I really enjoyed this time we had together. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Yeah. And for any high schoolers listening, definitely check out Hack Club. I'll probably link the website down in the show notes. But thank you so much for listening as well. Hope you really enjoyed this podcast and all of the things that Zach was sharing. So yeah, thanks so much for listening. And we hope to see you in the next one.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of Delta X Podcast with Ellen Hsu. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.